You know, that was a big deal.
I'm kind of an atomic blonde.
Someone suggested that we just start the podcast and start talking and then we intro. And
all right,
I said,
that's a great suggestion.
Is that a good idea?
This is our 21st podcast, so it's glad we figured that out.
Our podcast can drink, finally.
Welcome to Speaking Millennial. This is our 21st episode. I'm Jessica Nutt with our hosts, Bill Spadia and Jay Black. And I'm about to call our special guests, but we just learned something new about Jay.
Yeah, so Jay, for the audience's benefit.
Yes.
I just learned that you are a cat owner.
So yeah,
I'm a little surprised at that. I have to be honest.
Okay, so I'm surprised at that too because my whole life I was allergic to cats.
Right.
And I'm allergic to a lot of stuff. Obviously, look at me.
Not Wellbutrin.
Not what? Wellbutrin.
You are not allergic to that.
If I were allergic to Wellbutrin, Bill, I can honestly say wouldn't be here right now.
Fair enough. I would
be buried out with my other animals. So no, I had two dogs, and my daughter wanted a cat. So we got a cat.
So you overcame your allergy for your daughter. That's a good dad.
I was like, well, I'll get the cat and I'll see what happens. And
I would have offered to show pictures of a cat.
How do I call our guests?
I don't know. He's got to call us, I think. New Jersey 101.5 studio is where we have our podcast. There are two things that you can count on here. One is there won't be headphones. You got to bring your own.
Sure.
And two, I don't know how the board works because I think this is right from like 1982.
Yeah, I know because there's a long live Mr. T is etched into it. Whoever had this board originally, big Mr. T fan. I'm going to say this about the cat, Bill. Cat wakes me up every morning about 5 o'clock. It jumps on my chest and it pats my face until I wake up and I go down and I feed it. This was because my family went to Mexico on vacation and I was left alone.
They left you with the cat?
They left me with the cat. And the cat, I realized.
Oh, I would put the cat in a kennel.
It's the only time in my life. Now, I have three kids, but this is the first time in my life that a life actually depended on me to keep it alive. So it just bat me in the face. It would wake me up. I'd go downstairs. I'd feed it. And now the cat continues to depend on me, Bill. It loves me because I give it food.
All right. I will share. You've been honest and forthright.
Yes.
I also had a cat.
Mm. Oh.
For about 10 minutes.
Oh.
And it was a stray cat.
Okay.
I fed. And my mother subsequently gave away to the first person that walked by.
Oh, well, I mean, that's the way to do it.
Jessica's now leaving the podcast?
Yeah, you know, finally. It only took 21 episodes for her to go like, you know what? This podcast's not working out.
I think there's an issue with our guest. Now, who's our guest? Anthony.
Anthony.
Anthony?
I don't know if it's like
a
British spelling.
Does he go by Anthony?
It's Anthony.
Yeah. Anthony, what's his last name?
Johnston.
Anthony Johnston, who is the writer of the comic strip Atomic Blonde.
But the comic strip is like what you get in a newspaper.
So he wrote a comic book.
It's a comic
book. Is that what
you're
saying?
Yes.
So I have insulted him and he's not even on yet.
You're doing that old guy thing where you're changing one little aspect of it where it's like, are you on the Facebook?
He's in the funny pages.
Yes.
The funny papers. That's
what my grandfather used to call it.
The funny papers.
Yeah. And he used to say, see in the funny papers.
You know what's funny? The funny papers were not that funny.
No, they never were.
Never. I mean, comic strips are just not funny. I don't know why. Oh, Chris Knight is here.
Chris Knight is here.
Chris, how are you? We are on right now.
Is he here to fix? Oh, we're getting the call?
I think that's our guest.
Oh, hello.
Look at that. Hey, Chris, thank you.
I fixed it.
Chris fixed it.
Chris fixed it by just his presence in the room.
It just,
Anthony, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you. How are you?
I'm doing great. Go ahead, Jay. I want to introduce our friend.
I got to say, it was my suggestion, Anthony, to get you because I'm a huge fan of Unjustly Maligned, and I've been listening to it for, I guess 2 years now. I don't know how you're in episode 80 something. Huge fan of it. And it's just so cool to actually hear your voice talking to me on the podcast. It's neat to hear. Big fan of your work. You can see Anthony Johnston go to the Incomparable Network. He's on. That's the name of it, the Incomparable Network, right?
I think they pronounce it incomparable.
Incomparable.
Incomparable. See, you got to get UK style.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's incomparable. You know why? It sounds more educated.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Anthony, right? I mean, incomparable. Who says that?
Yeah.
We had an odd silence there. I've either insulted our guest, we've disconnected him, or
he's still there.
No. I'm still here. There's just a bit of a delay.
I got to say, everything that is said in that accent sounds smarter than anything that's said in an American accent.
It's why Siri is better with a British accent.
Absolutely. I wonder, Anthony, on the other side of the pond, as they call it, does that like if we come in and talk with an American accent, it doesn't sound classier over there, does it?
I will take the fifth.
Anthony has an Alabama accent on his Siri. I think that's what it is.
But no, I'm a big fan of Unjustly Maligned and, you know, Atomic Blonde. I had no idea until we put all this together that you wrote the comic book that Atomic Bomb Blonde is based on. Is that correct?
That is correct. Yeah, it's a graphic novel called The Coldest City.
That is amazing.
So how big a deal is going from, and I apologize, right before you came on, I called it a comic strip. All of a sudden I showed my age. But how it's a huge deal going from a comic book to a movie. I really want to ask, how was the payday?
It was not bad.
I'll bet.
Yeah.
How did that first happen, though? You know, somebody called. How does that process work? Not that I'm in the process of writing a comic book that I hope will get to a movie, but I am curious.
Well, I think it's different according to, you know, sort of which publisher and how you go about it. But the book was published by Oni Press, who are based in Portland, Oregon. And Oni had, at that time, a partnership with a production company in Hollywood who represented most, not quite all, but most of their books. And so it was, they put together a sort of, you know, a pitch based on my pitch of the book. And we just got lucky. We got really lucky with the timing. Charlize Theron was looking for something like this.
What a huge get. Yeah. What are the chances Charlize Theron was looking for?
I know.
You know, I got this idea with this Atomic Blonde thing. Has anybody written one? How true to the book did they stay? I mean, that's the big complaint you hear from people saying, I read the book and then I saw the movie and it killed it.
Yeah, it's on the one hand, it's very faithful. On the other hand, not so much. And that is that the basic story and the characters and even in some cases whole lines of dialogue are basically the same as the book. They're very, very close. But the feel of it is very different. The book is a sort of John le Carre style noirish, very sober Cold War spy thriller. And, you know, if you've seen any of the trailers or even the movie itself, obviously, you know that that's not the feel and approach they took with the production. It's sort of neon saturated noir instead, and obviously full of wall-to-wall action. But the overall, the plot and the structure and the framing device and the characters, they're all the same. So yeah, on the one hand, it's very faithful, but on the other hand, not so much. It's kind of weird, but I like it. I'm very, very happy with it.
Well, I got to say that, you know, my son and I, who's 10, I feel like people were giving me crap that I was taking my 10-year-old to see Atomic Blonde, but I feel like it's appropriate. You're shaking your head, Jessica.
Was it R?
It's R rated.
No, I'm thinking there's other things that it, you know, like watching South Park would go on the list too.
Yes, I'm a terrible father, Anthony, because I like to bring my son to see all of these things, even though because he's my first child, I need to have a partner when I go to see these things.
Why did it get an R rating?
I was watching stuff just as quote unquote bad as this when I was 10 years old. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, I feel like if you talk to any creator, especially a genre creator, I think that early on you kind of get sucked into this vortex in a way that, you know, perhaps other people don't. You know, you're very quick to come to it. So I'm just hoping to raise a child that produces work that I can go see. That's all. I'm just training him.
That's got to be the dream, hasn't it?
Oh God, yes, yes. He said he wanted to go to University of Southern California Film School, USC Film School. So we actually toured the campus in January. So I'm like a sports dad, but for film.
So now I know why you were asking about the payday.
Well, that's it.
Well, that was Bill. He's just a Republican.
Yeah, see, I listen, Anthony, I go right for the money. That's it. Because that's what I thought of. They had a $30 million budget for this movie.
Right.
So I'm thinking, how much of that is, you know, you got to pay the guy who created the concept.
All right, so when I first invited him on, he was like, what do you guys want to talk about? I'm not a millennial. And I'm like, no, not everyone is millennials on here. But I did have some topic lists I sent him.
Oh, yeah. Oh cool.
Wait, Jessica, you want to get us back on track?
Okay,
good.
Instead of asking him how much he makes.
Listen, Anthony, I'm sure you weren't insulted by that. I can't be the only one that thought, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
No, you're not. Many people have said that, and I'm very, you know, very flattered and grateful.
And real fast, before we go to Jessica's list, I just had a question for you. Portland, Oregon, where Oni Press is located, I just performed, I'm a comedian, and I performed out there a year ago, and I'm told that, like, a lot of the comic creators live in Portland. Is there like a huge scene there or something that I'm not aware of?
There is. Well, I don't know whether you're aware of it, but
that's
yes,
good point.
There is. Over the last 10 years or so, Portland has kind of become probably the second most concentrated comic creator home.
Really?
After New York. There's quite a few live in LA. Kansas City, of all places, is quite a popular place for comic creators as well. But Portland now has three comics publishers.
Wow.
That is Dark Horse, Oni Press, and Image Comics moved out there recently. And they have an absolute wealth of top flight creators all living there now. And it's a lovely, I can understand why. I've been there to visit some of them myself, and it is an absolutely lovely town. You know, I could quite happily live there myself. Mainly because the weather's the same as it is in England.
I was going to say, is it right? Dark, dreary, wet?
Yeah.
Yep. See, I'm used to all that.
I just wanted to get that out of the way because I'm a big comic fan.
No, that's fine.
It's important for me. I'm excited. This is exciting for me. We have a comic creator on the line here.
So Portland's like the number one city to move to if you're millennial, if you look on Google.
I don't get that. I don't understand those the articles. Fascination with Portland.
I don't know. I think
it can't
it's
be
like,
cheap to live out there.
I think it's people really enjoy wearing sandals out there. Millennials love
very
wearing
crunchy.
Sandals.
It's, yeah, very,
it's very
crunchy.
Crunchy. Yeah. Yeah. Remember we were talking about being able to tell if people smell just by looking at them? Pretty much 80% of Portland. I had that feeling as I walked around.
When were you there?
I was there like a year and a half ago. I was opening for Kevin Nealon.
So
out there.
Our non-millennial guest, Anthony.
Yes.
Is ready to answer whatever questions you have, Jessica, on our topic list.
Oh,
I didn't realize we had a topic list. When did that start?
Yeah, and you sent it to Anthony. You didn't send it to us.
Yeah, why did we see it?
It would have been nice if we saw it.
Well, you saw the Instagram for restaurants.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that was one of them.
Yeah. Okay.
So now restaurants are just designing like a new platform. How are they going to choose their floors, their tables, so that people will go come in and get the Instagram on their feed?
So if I get this straight, they're designing restaurants around the idea that you want to take pictures of your stupid food.
And like the decor, and you want to take a picture of yourself in front of like the mural that they have on the wall outside.
You know what I would do? I would have other pictures from Instagram of meals hang on the wall. And that way you could just get a picture next to like, look how big my meal is.
You can take a picture of yourself eating your meal while looking at a picture of your meal.
Yep.
I'm thinking Anthony's listening to them saying, America's in trouble. They're in trouble.
I think he's working on a new Unjustly Maligned for this podcast.
Right.
And meanwhile, the butcher is probably like, that's a great idea for my new restaurant.
The butcher probably loves this idea. Yeah. So Anthony, my daughter lives in London. She goes to the University of the Arts, and she lives at Barron's Court, and she's dating a butcher. So we have hashtagged him Charlie the Butcher, and he's coming. Now, he has never been to the States, but he's going to be here on Friday. So we're calling it Meat Day. And what we thought we'd do, because he's like he's got this culinary skill. It's incredible. He cooks and he understands everything. We're going to buy cheesesteaks.
Oh, yeah.
That was my big idea. With fake American cheese.
It's cheese whiz. You're just
cheese whiz. Whiz on. Yeah, cheese whiz.
Have you ever had a cheesesteak, Anthony?
No, because I don't eat meat. But don't you have to go down to Philly to get a real cheesesteak?
The guy knows his stuff.
Yeah.
You do. Actually, Jay lives close to Philly, so he is going to come up and deliver the cheesesteaks. The only thing I hope is they're hot by the time they get here.
Well, I'm going to
put them in the toaster oven.
Yeah, or I'm going to just I'll keep my car heated. I have heated seats in my car. I'll put them there.
Oh, that's an excellent idea. Now, the last three trips I've made to the UK, all three, we had bright, sunny days.
Yeah, that's that. You're not getting the full experience.
I agree.
I'm gonna move here.
What do you think I know? I'm like, the weather's great. I love it. And I'll tell you another thing. Now, Anthony, I'm sure you're not relying on the underground. I think at your level, you got a driver. There's a guy waiting right now to take you wherever you want to go. But for the rest of us, I was taking the underground, and it's incredible. It's so efficient. I want to send everyone in New Jersey and New York to London to learn how public transportation should work.
Well,
It is very good, but there is a price, literally a price, and that is that the underground here costs an average of about three or four times more than the New York subway per trip.
Yeah, and you
it
don't get
me up when I hear New Yorkers complain about how expensive their subway is, because it is dirt cheap compared to London or Paris.
And do you guys have all that free entertainment that we have on the New York subway?
Yeah, we don't actually have it in the subway cars. That's not allowed, but we have it in the stations.
Well, there's entertainment, but you know what? They lack the smell of urine. You don't have that in the tube stops. They're clean. No, it's shocking.
It's true, but we do have rats everywhere, so give and take.
I feel like Elizabeth did not back you up on your claim that the tube is super clean. She's like rolling her eyes. Like,
no, and Anthony is backing up my daughter. Like, that's, I know. I don't know. You know what it was? It was the contrast. I mean, you go to the subway in New York and you're horrified.
You know what they probably did? They probably said, oh, here's an American. They put you in the American car. It looks better.
I was on the American tube. That's what it is.
Yeah, they're like, oh, yeah, here comes an American here. Oh, this is what they're all like. Trust me.
That's probably what happened.
It's like when you clean your house real well when you have guests coming over and you're just like, oh, yeah, my house is always like this. Clean. Yeah,
I didn't even clean. It's such a mess.
Vacuum for your cat.
In the tourist car.
Yeah. Anthony, I saw on your website that you write video games.
Yes.
What is are you not programming them? You're writing them, or what? Explain to me what that is, because I'm very interested. You did I'm looking here. It's Morrowind. Is that what you did?
No, Morrowind wasn't me. No, you're probably thinking of Shadow of Mordor.
Shadow of Mordor. Yep, that's what I'm looking at. I'm sorry. Shadow of Mordor, Blackwood Crossing, The Assembly Dead, Space Extraction. I can't pronounce this one. Zombie U. So do you just write the dialogue for it, or do you program?
No, I don't. I'm not a coder, but I write the, it depends what the job is and what's required. But yes, I write everything from, I'll write stories or design levels or, just write a script or do all of those things. It depends from job to job. Like in the first Dead Space, I wrote the script. On Zombie U, I did a lot of the background world development, co-wrote the plot, and then wrote the script. On Blackwood Crossing, I consulted. I didn't actually do any script writing, but I consulted on it. And then on The Assembly, I came in and did a page one rewrite of, over somebody else's draft. So I didn't write the story so much as kind of rewrote everything and the script, and it just differs from game to game. But yes, it's the script writing and the story writing. I'm not a programmer.
Anthony, what is your target audience for that? I mean, there are millennials coming up, and what are they looking for? Like, I'm thinking about the transition from the book to the movie in terms of the action. Like, what is that new audience looking to be entertained with?
Honestly, I mean, you know, if I knew that, I would be a very rich man indeed. what I do, whether I'm working in video games, graphic novels, novels, whatever, I always try to I actually try to write stories that I would want to consume, you know, read, watch, play, whatever. And just to sort of make sure that they're engaging and that they feel true. And by that, I don't necessarily mean true as in factual, but that they feel true. They don't feel like they're cheating or that they're speaking down to an audience. That's something I think is really important, and I think certainly younger readers and game players appreciate, is not being treated like they're kids or idiots, because a surprising number of creators my age and above will do that. And I err on the side of assuming that they are intelligent and will work stuff out if you give them the space to do so, rather than needing
it. It makes for such a more interesting film read. I love it.
I can tell you that in the comedy world, you know, I perform at these NACAs, which is essentially you go and you do 15 minutes and the kids decide whether or not they want to bring you to the college to do stand up there. I have a lot of agents that have told me, like, you know, pretend you're younger. You know, you look younger. So, like, pretend that you're not married. You have a fiance and you don't have kids. You have pets, you know, do that. And I'm like, you know, the kids, like the college kids know what a child is. They know what a wife is. You can, right. Like, if I say I have a wife, it's not like they're sitting there going, I have no point of reference for this. So I agree with you 100% that, you know, there's this idea that writing for young people means, you know, sort of adopting their nomenclature and their usages. And I feel like they smell that bullshit a mile away. Mm-hmm. Whereas speak to something that's maybe outside of their frame of reference, but they understand what you're talking about, they'll enjoy it just like any other audience will. So I agree with you 100%.
Right. I can't wrap my head around.
But you mean it.
Say that again,
right,
I'm sorry?
Sincerity, that you mean it.
Yes.
Right? Sincerity, of course.
Yeah.
We talk about this in politics, that I've said this over and over again. Voters are actually not stupid. They're busy. They're preoccupied. They're not paying attention until the last minute.
Right.
And then they react to things that they hear. And I think it's a huge mistake to underestimate them. Look at Brexit. Look at how people were underestimated.
I'm actually, I'm looking at the polls right now. It's 37% of American voters are stupid as of today.
As of today? Is that the official number?
Sometimes it fluctuates up and down.
What's the margin of error on that, Jay?
Plus or minus orange.
Oh, see, you got to go there. Jessica?
No, I was just going to...
Jessica, what were you going to say?
Ask about writing for, what was it? Like the virtual reality video games now. Like, I think, how do you even write to that?
That is a really strange one. Yeah, I've done two of those now. And the strange thing about writing for virtual reality is that you can't be as loud because people are generally experiencing it, you know, in a much more immersive fashion. And so if you're sort of bombastic and loud, it can get really annoying really fast. But you also have to simply write more, because what we've found is that people will try to do more if they're wearing the goggles and they're fully immersed. They will fiddle around with the environment a lot more. Sound designers have found this as well. They have to do things like, I don't know, if there's a refrigerator, they have to figure out 5 different sounds according to how close you are to the fridge, because people will literally open the door and stick their head in it.
That's crazy.
Which they wouldn't do in a normal video game. So it's a very different kind of, you know, writing style, but it's very interesting. I think I always look to try and do things that use new technologies and have new ways to approach games, because I find that fascinating.
That's the idea of the refrigerator sound design. I just had a brief flash of, that's a job I would never want in a million years to have to go, like, all right, what does a refrigerator sound like from 5 different spaces away? There's a level of organization there that is beyond me on that one.
Oh, me too. But the people who do this stuff, they love it. They live for that.
Question. I'm looking at your output here in the comic book world. Do you prefer, I mean, I'm sure writing your own stuff is what you prefer, but, like, you know, getting a hold of Wolverine or Daredevil, you know, as a comic fan growing up, that's got to be, I mean, so far as like dreams come true for 13-year-old Jay, getting to write Wolverine is like maybe 5th on that list, other than like see boobs. What was that like? Was it a lifetime fulfillment, or was it just another gig at that point for you?
It's sort of halfway between the two. You must remember, I grew up in England, and so I didn't grow up reading, you know, superheroes every month. So I didn't grow up with characters like Spider-Man and Wolverine and Daredevil and what have you. Not that I wasn't aware of them,
sure,
but they weren't a sort of fixture of my daily life. I grew up reading British comics like 2000 AD, Judge Dredd. There was a horror comic called Scream that I used to love.
Miracle Man? Were you...
Eagle. That was relaunched in the 80s. Sorry, what was that?
Miracle Man is Alan Moore.
Oh, yeah. Right, when that was originally published in Warrior. I actually didn't read that because I didn't read Warrior at the time. But I read it, you know, fairly soon after it was first published, because it became such a phenomenon. But yeah, I didn't grow up with superhero comics. So it was fun to work on those. You know, I enjoyed doing Wolverine as a manga. That was a sort of very fascinating challenge.
Sure.
And I enjoyed working on Daredevil because he's a very interesting character. Shang-Chi is one of my favorite Marvel characters because it's just kung fu, and I love kung fu. But yeah, it's not something that I've wanted to do since I was 6 years old, which is the case for many American writers.
Sure.
But that's just never really been on my radar. I've always focused much more on writing my own stuff.
I know that I'm making Bill and Jessica a little nutty because I'm the nerd here.
We did, Jay, coming into this, we fully expected this. This is like, you're meeting your own superhero right now.
Well,
Anthony, you have no idea. Well, you now do know exactly where you rank in the world of Jay Black.
I'm curious, how tightly integrated into like the London comic scene are you? I think of all the sort of British writers together, like Grant Morrison and Neil Gaiman. Like, you guys, I picture you all going out and having tea once a week. Is that about right? Or is it a little bit more spread out than that?
A little bit more spread out. I mean, like, neither myself nor Grant nor Neil actually live in London. In fact, Neil lives in America now.
Oh, really? I had no idea.
Yeah. Yeah, he has done for years. And I live in the northwest of England. I did live in London for a while, but not anymore. There is a big concentration of British comic creators in London, though, and I do know many of them. And yeah, you know, if I'm in town, we'll go out and have a drink, you know, with a few friends and maybe get dinner or something. But it's not something where, you know, there's a secret club where 100 comic creators all go every Sunday to roll up their trouser leg and, you know, make some like handshakes.
A Hall of Justice. Yeah, or, but Justice, you know what? League meets. There's one place, Jay.
If there was a secret club where 100 comics creators met every Sunday, that's exactly what you would say, that there isn't one.
Of course,
so I feel like you're kind of telling us that there is one.
You've learned nothing here, Jay. That's it.
One last question, then I'll let the normies talk. The end of The Killing Joke, do you agree with Grant Morrison? Did Batman kill the Joker, in your opinion?
No. No, I disagree. I think it's a fascinating way to read the book, but I disagree, mainly because Alan says that's not what he wrote. So,
yeah, but, you know, I think at this point you can't trust Alan Moore. The beard says, don't listen to what I'm saying.
But you know, the beard's always said that.
Bill and Jessica are like, you know,
I'm listening to this and I'm like, I don't even understand your question sometimes.
Yeah, this is just, we're speaking in code to each other.
I was going to say, this is some secret comic book to comic talk.
Now you know how I feel when we're talking about sports.
That's what just happened to me.
Yes.
See, and then I was going to go down the whole path of politics and I'm thinking, that's not going to go over well.
Well, I mean,
I do want to talk about the podcast, though.
But just to politics, though, I mean, Atomic Blonde is set during the, you know, 1989, the fall of the Berlin Wall. So I feel like politics is, you know, something to appropriate to the conversation.
I will admit this, Anthony, I have not seen it yet. But after Jay's review yesterday, we talked about it yesterday.
Such a jerk.
I know. I am?
Yeah.
Why? Because, look, I'm honest.
Good point.
You know, I'm honest. That's it.
Not pretending.
But I am going to go see it. Because of this conversation. Well, the one that last night that you sold it.
Yeah. No, it's the, I feel like the movie itself, we talked about this last week, the look of it, you know, you were talking about the neon look, you know, I feel like some of the art direction didn't necessarily match the subject matter. That was my only sort of complaint. And it feels like that's what you were talking about, that you wrote a John, is it LeClaire or LeCarre? A story, and they were shooting for an action that sometimes didn't meld 100%, but I thought both of those ideas were well executed in their own right. A big fan of just, you know, I write movies, but they're Hallmark movies, so it doesn't really count that what I do versus what you guys do over there.
Oh, I wouldn't say that.
Oh, believe me, watch my movies and you'll know 100% that they
don't
count.
You should send him a link to the Hallmark, the whole... that made Jessica cry.
Well, I've been asking to be sent a link for the Christmas one and still haven't seen it.
Yeah, there's no reason. There's no reason to see it. In fact, if you're listening to this, don't watch it. And if you own it, erase it. Thank you.
I watched it and fast-forwarded to your parts.
Yeah, I act in them too.
I don't think I got the full story.
I'm fascinated to know what kind of, like, which side of Hallmark movies are they? Are they the sort of not without my daughter, weepy, you know, like estrangement stories? Or are they the romance, unrequited, middle-aged people falling in love kind of stories?
In fact, that's how we pitched it. We walked in and said, this is middle-aged people falling in love. And before we got to the love, they were like, we're buying it.
Yeah,
and I act in them too, and let me tell you how invested they are in the acting. I said, well, I wrote a part for myself, is it okay? And before I even got to okay, they're like, yeah, okay, we don't care. Yeah, just
it was a low threshold.
Yeah, the act, I was like, kind of, and they're like, all right, you can be in them. I said, okay.
And that's not to diminish your performance, Jay.
And they said, do you work for scale? I said, I do. And that's it. That's all I wanted.
That's it.
But yeah, no, I will say one of the directions I got, and I don't really mind because I don't feel like Hallmark is going to be listening to this podcast in particular. One of the directions I got from the female executive that I was working with said, you've given too much, what's actualization? You've given too much motivation to your female characters. Could you draw it back and have them be less self-actuated? And I said, I thought that the point was to not do that. And they were like, no, our audience prefers the females to be reactive instead of active.
That's fascinating.
It's as
but they know their audience. It's about money. This is about business, not about politically correct culture.
Yeah. So it's interesting that the female executive was telling me that the female characters were too independent. And they wanted them to be more dependent, which was an interesting, as you said, regressive cells in the Midwest.
But I also think that when it comes down to money, that the TV movie executives are not going to let their own political beliefs stand in the way of something that's going to make a buck.
Absolutely.
And I don't blame them. Like, that's it. It's entertainment. Anthony, I don't know about you. I have a hard time separating sometimes when I hear an actor go on a rant about politics. I then can't see through that rant when I see their movie.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
I don't mind it.
No, you don't care.
No, because it's everybody talks about politics. We were talking about this with Trevor East. You know, it's the idea of the, like, you go, I don't want your politics and the acting. But if I go to Facebook and my Uncle Joe is posting, you know, his feelings on Trump, he's still my Uncle Joe. It's everybody talks about politics. It's just that these people are more famous so that when they talk, people listen. That's
so
the
I do
only
have an
difference.
Exception. So I had a bit of a Twitter exchange battle with Alec Baldwin, and he blocked me. But I still watch him on Saturday Night Live because he's funny.
He's funny. Fantastic. Guy's great. Yeah, I mean,
okay,
I...
Okay, so this is an interesting kind of segue into what you were saying about business versus ideology. Mm-hmm. I mean, these articles that, you know, your subject matters for today, the Instagram restaurants mm-hmm. and the airline for millennials. See, that's kind of... I read those and I'm like, I don't have a problem with either of these developments because mm-hmm. they are just businesses adapting to... changing tastes and changing priorities on the part of consumers. There's been some fascinating stuff going on recently. A friend of mine, Lisa Schmeiser, who's a journalist, tech journalist, and also writes about sort of social economics and retail culture and stuff. She has a newsletter called So What, Who Cares? That I highly recommend. And one of the things that she's noticed over the last few years is a lot of studies talking to young people, you know, millennials and young consumers, and they are not interested in stuff. They are simply not interested in material goods. What they're interested in is experiences which they can either share with their friends or brag about to their friends. And so these restaurants and the airline for millennials that focuses on experience and high-end, mm-hmm. you know, sort of premium experience rather than cost or whatever, I think they're just reacting to the market. And these things go in cycles. You know, in 10 years' time, maybe less, there'll be a reaction and everybody will be making really bare, minimalist stuff that looks terrible in photographs because that'll be anti what's popular. That's the way things always go. But for now, I don't have a problem with any of this. I know some people are probably outraged at the idea of restaurants decorating themselves so that they look better in photographs. But what else is a restaurant other than a place you go for a dining experience? If you just want to eat, you'd stay at home.
See, I don't know. I look at it from the food perspective. I don't like bad service, but I would rather have a completely out-of-the-way, unassuming place that had dirt on the floor if the food was good. Some of the best meals I've had are in those tucked-away places that are kind of like an off-alley in the middle of New York, and it's this small space with four or five tables, and you get some of the best meals.
I would say that there's probably...
Everybody loves those. I love those too. But this isn't a zero-sum game. Just because something, a place is focusing a lot of attention onto how it looks, you know, and whether it's attractive to people who want to take photos of themselves, doesn't all necessarily mean that the food is therefore bad. You can have both.
That's true.
I think that one of the issues that that people have is that they have a hard time separating their feelings about millennials from the businesses that are catering to them. So I agree with you 100% that the idea is that, you know, I'm just trying to make my consumer base happy. I think that when you hear people yelling and screaming about the restaurant, it's less about the restaurant than the group that they're catering to. And I think that's where it becomes problematic because they go, I would never do that. So why should other people do that? And you go, well, that's the whole point. Other people are different.
I think they're going to have trouble with the airlines though, because to me, millennials who are traveling for the experience. It's all about how do I get there in the cheapest way possible. Now, for me, going back and forth to London, I love Air India.
Air India is good.
I love it.
I flew back from there.
It's cheap. There's a slight smell of the food, like when lunch comes out.
Curry.
You know, it stays in the cabin for a good 2 hours.
Yeah, but it's like, just get me there without any layovers and I'm happy.
You agree?
Yeah.
Right?
First off, it's hard to do a layover in the Atlantic Ocean. Second off, if I fly United.
Well, now wait, I saved about $400 when I flew my daughter back last time. She stopped in Iceland.
Oh,
It was a 9-hour layover, so that was a little problematic.
Reykjavik?
It was okay for me.
Did she go in the hot springs?
No, it wasn't enough time to leave the airport. She had like 7 hours.
To hang out in an airport.
Yeah, and she hung out. There was nothing there. Everything was closed. It was awful. So I've made a promise to not do that. The $275 I saved was worth it to me, apparently not to her.
I like flying for experience too, Bill. If I fly United, if I don't get pulled off and beaten, I feel gypped. If I'm flying United, I want someone to beat me unconscious, if possible.
I think you pay extra for that these days.
I'm sure it's like a beating fee.
I think you do. But am I right? The theme of the airline, I can see it, Anthony. I agree with you on the restaurants. I can see that because people are about the experience. But I also find that most people don't have a discerning palate when it comes to food. They don't care that much. Most people are not that focused on all the different ingredients. And you know, to me, I love to eat. I don't know how you're a vegetarian. How did that happen?
Oh, well, it was many, many years ago. What do you mean you don't know how I'm a vegetarian? What, you don't know any other vegetarian?
I try to hang out with meat eaters.
Butchers.
I'm curious, Anthony, how did the podcast come about? And was that a did you sort of come up with the idea, or did the Incomparable come to you and say, hey, we have this idea, we want you to host it? Or what was the genesis of that?
No, it was an idea that I had. I'd thought about doing a podcast for a while, and then I was chatting to a friend of mine, a guy called Moises Chirian, who's also a podcaster, on Twitter. We were just sort of joking back and forth about the fact that we are probably the only two people we know who really, really like Billy Joel's album, River of Dreams.
I love that album!
Billy Joel out. Well, most Billy Joel fans absolutely hate it, but we really like it.
Well, they changed producers, but it's okay. It's still wonderful. I'm sorry, go on. I'm a huge Billy Joel fan. I love that. It tells the story of a man coming to terms with the fact that his manager stole all his money.
Jay, this is your favorite podcast ever.
I want to say I'm turgid. I am very turgid at the moment.
It occurred to me that there are actually a lot of albums like that, you know, and bands like that, whether I really like and a lot of people don't, or albums by a particular band, like, let's say, for example, the Load album by Metallica, which a lot of hardcore Metallica fans really don't like, but I've always thought was a great album.
Great album.
Wait, Jay, go ahead, react. Jay just did his reaction in silence.
Silently.
I didn't want to go to his reaction. I feel like a lot of people think it was a sellout album because they cut their hair, and in the video for Until It Sleeps, they're not wearing their hair long, so a lot of dummies went, oh, well, they're not good anymore. They cut their hair. It's a great album. And Reload's good, too.
It is a great album. And it's a necessary album for them to sort of, you know, they would have, basically, that band would have split up if they hadn't recorded that album. So out of that, I made a joke saying maybe I should do a podcast where I just rant about albums that I like that everybody else doesn't appreciate. And, you know, that was a funny joke, ha-ha. But then it sort of kept, you know, it stayed in the back of my mind. And I started thinking, hang on, what if I did that, but not just for albums? And that's where the concept of Unjustly Maligned came about. We're on the Incomparable because I invited a few friends, most of whom were podcasters themselves, to be sort of guests for, I wanted to record pilot episodes to see whether or not the concept had legs. One of which was my friend Moises, who runs the Electric Shadow Network, but one of them was Jason Snell, who runs the Incomparable Network. And the minute I mailed Jason to explain what the idea was and ask him to be a guest, he asked me to bring the show to the Incomparable. He said, this is a great idea. I would love for you to bring it to the network and be a part of it. And I was an Incomparable listener anyway. I love many shows on the network. So, yeah, it kind of seemed like a no-brainer. We've been there, just over 2 years now.
That's fantastic. Real fast, favorite song on River of Dreams?
Oh, you know, to do that, I would have to actually bring up the album, because it's been a while since I actually listened to it, and so I don't want to say the first thing off the top of my head in case I forget an album.
I'm going to say this, Jessica, Bill, if you guys want to go take a smoke break, me and
I was thinking just going to talk albums. I love it.
Great Wall of China is a good one.
I'm a Glass Houses fan.
Great Wall of China is great, but I really like Blonde Over Blue as well.
In Hell There's a Big Hotel where the bar just closed and the windows never open. Thank you.
Yep. All About Soul is a really good one. Even Goodnight, My Angel, which is, you know, probably the sappiest song that Billy Joel's ever recorded, but it's a really good song.
Lullaby. I used to sing that to my daughter to get her to sleep. I love that. And it goes right. It's perfect. Lullaby goes right into River Dreams, track 7 into track 8. I'm not looking at the album. I'm just remembering.
You are not.
Because I love it.
Famous last words, Jay.
That was the actual last song he ever wrote.
Famous last words.
Famous last words, because he was a huge Beatles fan. If you remember, the last song the Beatles ever recorded was The End on the Abbey Road album. That's why he did Famous Last Words.
Ah, I see.
He tried to kill himself by drinking paint thinner in 1972. Yeah. A lot of people don't know that.
Really?
Yeah, if you ever hear the song "Tomorrow Is Today," that was the suicide note that he left. Wow. And he wrote a talk about, I'm a narcissist. Everybody says I'm a narcissist. To write a song to say goodbye to everybody when you're killing yourself with paint thinner. Yeah. But "Tomorrow Is Today" off of Cold Spring Harbor was his suicide note that he left when he was living in a house with his best friend and his wife, his best friend's wife. Their bedrooms connected by a connecting closet. His best friend's wife, Elizabeth, would sneak out of bed, come and have sex with Billy Joel. And Billy Joel's career wasn't going well. He's sleeping with his best friend's wife. He's having a complete mental breakdown. He leaves a suicide note. He wakes up in the hospital, and 6 months later, he records Piano Man.
Anthony, you just heard the script for Jay's next Hallmark movie. I think that's where we are. And we apologize for bringing it down.
Famous last words.
I wrote Billy Joel into my latest Hallmark movie.
Of course you did.
In the hopes that I could meet him. Basically, everything I do is to meet people I like. Well, no, we're going to see. The movie's getting made. We'll see.
So how's this podcast going then for you?
Well, Anthony, are you going to invite us onto your podcast now because we did this?
To talk about millennials or Billy Joel or what?
I'll pick a Billy Joel album.
I think Jay wants to come on and talk about
Billy Joel album.
About Billy Joel. That's what I think.
I think Billy Joel as an artist is unjustly maligned. He's never gotten the respect. He's the best, other than BoJack Horseman, he is the best pop culture writer about depression that exists on the planet. You listen to 90% of his songs are about what it's like to be a manic depressive in this world. As someone who's on enough Wellbutrin to kill a small army of rhinoceros, I can tell you he writes about depression better than anybody.
He gets you.
He gets you. Everybody. Sorry, I got angry for a second.
I think it's a bit tricky to claim that Billy Joel as a whole is unjustly maligned, though, given that, you know, this is a man who has had enormous success throughout his life.
He's got enormous success. Yes, he's never gotten critical success, though. I don't think there's a Rolling Stone review of one of his albums that
could
has been
you
above
narrow it down
stars.
To an album? You could.
Any of them.
It would have to be River of Dreams, yeah.
Right. River of Dreams. You already did that episode, though, I suppose.
Songs that,
right?
Even many Billy Joel fans.
No, we've never actually covered
heard
the
of.
Album on the show.
What?
Even though it was the genesis of the show, we've never actually covered it.
Anthony, I'm getting on a plane right now. I will be in England in, I don't know, 7 hours. Come meet me at, I don't know, what's the airport there? Heathrow. To do River Dreams. I think, everything he does is wonderful, Billy Joel.
Everything, huh?
Even when he drives into someone's house, he does it with style and grace.
He didn't sleep with the best friend's wife?
Well, I mean, he was obviously doing a better job having sex with her than the best friend was.
The moral standards of this episode have just come crashing down.
I'm just saying, he's a wonderful artist. That's all.
So not unjustly maligned, though. So actually, that begs an interesting question. So fame and fortune have something to do with it.
On unjustly maligned,
right,
Anthony?
How do you mean?
Well, meaning if they've made it, even if one song, one album did not make it, it's hard to put them in that category because, generally speaking, huge success.
I think it depends on the circumstances. Like, I mean, our second episode was about the Twilight saga, for example, and obviously Twilight's had enormous commercial success,
right?
But it is pretty much trashed by mm-hmm. you know, almost every serious critic out there. So it's not that we don't cover successful stuff, but it has to be, you know, of a certain type. I think
I thought the one of the recent episodes was great on Eyes Wide Shut. I was a big fan of that film, and I'm glad that someone is speaking up for it in pop culture. As I forget, were you not a fan of Eyes Wide Shut in that episode? Or
I was not. I'm afraid it did nothing for me. It's a shame because I love Kubrick, but yeah, that one just didn't do it for me.
And you were unswayed by the argument made by your guest.
I was, I'm afraid. Yeah.
I think it's a nice meditation on male insecurity. I was a big fan of. Do you ever see Eyes Wide Shut, Bill?
I believe it or not, I have.
Oh wow!
Yeah.
Okay,
not great.
I think you come to see
bored. I was bored.
For
right,
me,
that was my problem.
Yeah, right. It moves so slowly. Like there's such an affectation with some of the scenes just dragging out, and you don't need that.
But that's Kubrick. Everything's an affectation with him.
But you either hit or miss on that.
2001.
Yeah, well, I mean, you were probably high during 2001. That's the proper way to see it. If you're not...
Once again, I'll take the fifth.
If you're not on mushrooms, you're not watching it correctly.
Is that what it is?
That's what it says on the box.
So, not enough drugs. That's the problem.
Yeah, well, you're the only person, Bill, that would go to see a movie that has an orgy and go, bored. I'm bored at this orgy.
I don't think I'm the only person. I think Anthony has just said the same thing.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah. You two are the
probably
only two.
The most unerotic orgy I've ever seen on cinema.
Right. The better question is, how do you ruin that?
Listen.
How do you take that material and make it boring? Like, think about the colossal failure that is.
I've been to many orgies, and I can tell you, this is true to life. This is what we all wear.
They're all really boring.
We all wear elaborate masks.
It's the masks that got me.
We all have teapots covering our genitals. That's what we do.
Oh, good. So now we have a title for the podcast. Thank you, Jay, for doing that.
Anthony Johnston, colon, teapots covering teapots our covering genitals.
Anthony, I want to thank you for joining us. I really appreciate you taking all the time.
Oh, you're welcome. It's been fun.
Yeah, it was great talking. So I just tweeted this out, and I followed you. Now, Jay's not going to do anything on Twitter, so don't be insulted if Jay doesn't follow you. He does not get Twitter at all.
My therapist wants me to only do things that make me happy, and Twitter is not one of them.
From Twitter, then, yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But you're on Twitter. I just tagged you. You're just at Anthony Johnston.
That's correct.
All right. Yeah. I am at Bill Spadia.
The right spelling.
Yeah, I think I found you right away, and it's a great picture with Charlize Theron in the upper third. Looks good. And movie's good. I'm going to see it this weekend.
Excellent. Well, so, I hope you enjoy it.
Thank you. Enjoy that next vegetarian meal. Sorry I insulted you with that. I just, you know, I go on kick sometimes. I love bacon. I just don't get the whole thing.
Maybe you'll get it, Bill, after 2,000 years. That's another River of Dreams reference.
Oh, very good.
Wow.
There will be other meat some other day.
That's it. All right, Anthony. Thank you very much. That's it. Great to talk to you.
We should probably
appreciate it. And Jay, you'll be in touch. What's that? We'll have to mention our sponsor.
Yeah.
Yes, I'll do. Well, I figure I'll do all the plugs afterward. We don't want to waste Anthony's time with that.
I didn't know that
you were going to sit through our whole sponsor stuff.
Sorry, Anthony.
All right. Good luck with all the upcoming projects. Thank you.
Thank you, and take care.
All right, take care.
Hi.
Anthony was great.
He was fantastic. Well, he knows what he's doing. That guy.
He knows what he's doing, so he agreed with me on the whole Kubrick thing. Like that. That movie sucked.
I disagree 100%.
No,
Eyes Wide Shut.
I was just wondering, did you ever do a promo or a movie review with Keane for Anthony's
we could do
movie?
It. We could do it for a preview for this. Although I would say that
why don't you do that?
Keane's not a huge fan
of what?
Atomic Blonde, so he might be might have some bad things
Let's
to say.
Let's not screw it up.
Yeah, we don't want to mess.
So here's the key. All right, so he just retweeted that. I was just about to say, the trick is whether Anthony had a good time on the podcast or not, will he retweet me right away? And that little ping you heard was that. So
Bill, you got to get
guy.
Bill, I'm not on Twitter. You got to DM him and tell him to get me on for River Dreams. Bill, I've been living my whole life for
this
moment.
I know. I will send him a DM.
Bill,
I will
look
do
into
that.
My eyes, Bill.
Maybe this will be the thing that gets Jay to download Twitter again.
Yeah, let me tell you something. I can wait. Jessica.
Well, now here's the thing. You can DM me if you follow me.
Right.
But if he doesn't follow me, I can't DM him.
Well, you can add him at me. Say Jay needs to come on. Bill, I haven't asked you for anything except for a kidney.
I am going to do that. So I will. Well, I'd give you a kidney if I
you would.
I got two. You know.
Yeah, that's so nice of you. Bone marrow?
I don't know.
I might
not
need
so sure with the bone I need marrow. I'm not so sure.
Might need
I mean,
a liver.
That regrows. So does your liver.
Hang on, Jessica.
Oh, that's it. I'll give you part of my liver. My liver's in good shape. I just went to the doctor. I do a physical
no
every year.
There's no possible way your liver's in good shape.
It's in, literally, it's in great shape. How about that?
I disagree. I feel like
I
you're
know. I almost feel like I should bring in the doctor's report.
I feel like you're going to Trump's doctor.
I would.
I think you're going to some long-haired guy.
I wanted
guy.
Somebody. It hurt. It hurt a little bit. I wanted somebody to ask me to disclose my medical information because I'm looking at it, and the doc looks at me. He's like, yeah, it's pretty good. Because he walks you through all the numbers, and I asked him twice on the liver.
Yeah, really.
Look, I like a little whiskey in the morning. That's what it is.
Did everybody do double take in the room? Like, was the nurse going, what? Jessica, bring up River Dreams. I want to see if I can do the track listing off the top of my head.
Oh, my God.
Let's do this.
Go ahead. Let's do it.
Bring it up.
Go ahead.
Well, what is River of Dreams?
River Dreams is 1993 album by Billy Joel.
And I thought I was a Billy Joel fan until I met you.
The cover is done by his wife, Christie Brinkley, even though they were having trouble at the time and they divorced shortly after.
Really quick. So the liver, as Jessica has pointed out correctly, does regrow. So I would be happy to share half my liver with you because I don't think the Wellbutrin's good for your liver. I'm just saying.
Can't possibly be.
Okay, there's number
no
one.
No Man's Land.
Number two.
Great Wall of China.
Go ahead, just keep going.
Number three is Crossing. Blonde Over Blue.
Mm-hmm.
Number four, All About Soul.
Oh. Nope.
Shades of Grey.
No, number four.
What is it?
Wait, you picked a real bad time? No.
Number four.
Number
four. Look how tough she's being. Like, not even smiling.
A minor?
Like, a minor variation. Number five is, I think...
Shades.
Shades of Grey. Number 7 is Lullaby. Number 8.
You just skipped 6.
I know.
Come
I'm going to go back
Jay,
to it. Number 8 is River Dreams.
And you want half my liver.
What's number 7?
Number 7 is Lullaby. Number 8 is River Dreams. Number 9 is 2,000 Years. Number 10 is Famous Last Words.
That's pretty good.
That's pretty good.
Off the top of my head. You could do that with any of his albums.
Didn't you like how I worked in Famous Last Words as a part of the conversation?
I agree.
It was kind of impressive.
It was great.
I'm just saying. I thought that was kind of impressive. I don't think I got enough props for that.
I'm going to give you props. I said I was turgid.
Do
you need anything else?
Which did is, say that.
So Anthony, a very classy way of saying I got an erection, everybody.
Yeah, well, okay. So back to our guest, Anthony.
He was fantastic.
He was fantastic. I think you called him Anthony and then Anthony, and then we went back and forth a little bit.
That's how
it's
you
hard
to
get
do
used
it
to the Anthony.
You say it quickly.
I like
and
it, though.
Anthony, like that.
And he sounds smart. I think he is smart.
No, he's just
he
British.
Was, by the way, he was not insulted. He was not insulted that I asked him about money.
No, nobody
he's
is.
Like, yeah, I made a shitload of money on this. This
no,
is great.
He didn't. He didn't say anything about it.
He said, I take the fifth.
Yeah.
He said I did well.
He did well.
No, yeah. He did. He said, I'm very happy with what he said I did well. Play back the tape.
But you know what? Would you want somebody to go, oh my God, I did.
You just said he made a shit ton of money. He did not say that.
I interpreted what he said. I interpreted what he said. Because he said, yeah, we did okay. Or he said something like that. I have to hear it again now.
What if he said?
He didn't just say, I take the fifth. He didn't want to answer a specific number. But I wasn't asking specific numbers.
You know why? Yes, because they have very onerous tax laws in England. He's probably.
He's hiding it.
He's hiding
that's
it.
It.
He probably had it delivered to him in a sack of
you know what he's
Oregon,
doing? He's going to stash it away and invest in Hallmark movies.
That's what you got to do.
That's how you hide it.
I felt so nervous talking to him because he was like writing a comic book and I'm writing like Love Always Santa.
So I have to send him a note and say, wait, you're in touch with him actually.
Yeah, I have the email pulled right up. So okay, dictate my email for.
Okay, here we go.
So what are you saying?
Anthony.
Anthony. You
will first say.
First.
Bill Spadia, Jay Black, and I loved having you on the podcast.
I
think it needs a re-intro. So he's like, yeah. Right, the annoying American who insulted my food habits and my income, that was right. Spadia. The nice guy who's a super fan, that was Jay Black. And then the very polite Jessica Nutt and professional.
Who's writing the note.
Like then he'll get who we are.
... Jay is still turgid. ...
Remember, this is not from you. This is from Jessica. Jessica has a professional demeanor.
Is there any
Let's not break through Jessica's professionalism.
All right, say.
I mean, honestly, the last episode you're talking about vagina eggs,
Remember
that? I know,
that?
And I it's going through the tabs on my computer. I'm like, oh, that tab is still up there.
You got to get rid of that. Goop has to go.
Jay's priapism is becoming problematic.
So all right, so wait, let's go back. All right. So first. I would say I like a first of all. Like it's conversational.
First of all,
Bill Spadia, Jay Black, and I loved having you on our podcast Speaking Millennial.
Happy face emoji.
No, I think exclamation point.
Exclamation
point. He is not a millennial, so I think we have to shy away from emojis. And I think this whole thing is
he's
three
just shooting
sentences
down
long.
All of your
smiley
look,
face emoticon.
You are very good with certain things. There are some things that I get. Obviously, pop culture, not one of them.
Jay loved your appearance. Three eggplants. I'm just saying, I'm just trying to show you how to do it. All right. So, yeah. All right. Yeah. First of all, thank you for coming on our podcast. Good. Yeah. Now let's get
all
to
right,
the
go.
Part
Stop.
About me doing
Next.
Billy Joel.
All right. So I think we go right into it.
I could do 5 hours on Billy Joel.
Jay,
I could do five hours right now.
Jay is very excited about the possibility of joining you on Unjustly Maligned. If it's at all possible,
I would fly
let
to England to do this goddamn thing. I love
I
Billy
think
Joel
you should
so
say
much.
That. Jay, I would say Jay is such a super fan. He is. Okay, wait, stop. Don't say that, and I'll tell you why. So we had a conversation yesterday about Chasing News and our panels that we put together. So some guy offered to drive for a 5-minute segment up from Virginia.
That's a little much.
Thank you. And we thought,
Yeah, that makes you look bad. Say, Jay's very excited, but we don't have to say would be willing to fly to England. You're
very
right.
excited, yeah. Eggplant emoji.
Right.
Right? Have I gotten the spirit of how you want to communicate this, Jay?
Sorry.
That she puts her head in her hand. That is what put her over the top.
Well, because you're
how
an authority figure.
How many more times
figure.
Do I need
right,
to hear eggplant
sorry.
Emoji?
Sorry. All right, Jay is right there with the possibility of joining
Anthony.
You unjustly.
He's still talking about River of Dreams.
If it's at all possible, let me know! Exclamation point. In parentheses, yes, he's still talking about River of Dreams.
Done.
Come on. What do you think?
Love it.
Now that's a good note.
It's his. I would say it's probably his only concept album, because it tells a story. It starts with an upset Billy Joel, who has his manager, who, by the way, his ex-wife's brother. I think it's a good idea to never let your ex-wife's brother handle your money. I think that's number one. Your
ex-wife's no.
Yes, Elizabeth's brother stole all his money, and he was sad. And this is the story of him coming to terms with the fact, hey, I don't need money. I'm going to go sell out Madison Square Garden 785 right. times. I'll make, screw you,
I'll ex-wife's make my brother. Own money. You sent it already.
I'm about to. I haven't yet.
All right.
I'm just making sure I spelled unjustly maligned right.
Interesting. I was thinking that.
You know what?
As I have think to about check it, millennial every time I write it.
Two L's, two N's.
Make sure I know, but I always have to check, especially with my fat thumbs on this.
My street is Millennium, so I have to, every time I give my address, I have to spell it for everyone.
Really?
Because right. millennials can't spell.
At shopping, like when you're out shopping and buying clothes.
That's a good point.
They have to like type in your address.
Right.
No one knows how to spell it.
As I think about it, I think I am exactly justly maligned. The level of malignancy towards me, absolutely apt.
Should I not send it then? Never mind. Jay's not interested.
No, me, no longer interested. Me personally, justly maligned.
You are justly maligned.
People are listening to the podcast going, I hate that guy.
Yeah.
I am not a fan. You know, the fact that he hates himself at first, I thought was like, yeah, maybe that makes me like him a little bit more. But no, it is just pure hatred. He is justly maligned.
Well, I don't know. Yeah, maybe.
And it's mostly my relatives.
Maybe. I was going to say, that's your father-in-law coming in.
My Aunt Patty's listening right now going, what a piece of shit that guy is.
So we got to talk about is it upcoming? Oh, yeah, this will drop before September 16th. So we have not yet done the World War II Memorial in Medford.
Well, World War I Memorial is September 9th.
World War I. Can I ask a serious question? Who shows up at a World War I Memorial fundraiser?
The survivors of the Lusitania.
Right.
That's a great reference. They all show up, yeah.
Right? Like who? Seriously, like are there going to be eight people there, or six, or is it a community thing where like the granddaughters, the great granddaughters are showing up to say, you know?
I'm going
to
tell you the problem with World War.
He served proudly.
Here's the problem with World War I, Bill. There's no identifiable good guy or bad guy. Now I know we fought war.
What?
No, here's what I mean.
Wait a minute,
Bill.
Okay. Oh God.
No, listen to me.
Some days, Jay.
Of course, I side with our side.
Okay, but that's not an of course. It's not like they're the moral equivalents.
But no, but there is a moral equivalence because it was all just packs. It was one guy gets shot, and then everybody has these packs.
Think
that they
of
have to
your
follow.
Archduke Ferdinand. Like, how does that happen? And then boom, the whole thing unravels. All of Europe.
Right. I mean, World War II, identifiable bad guys.
Yeah.
You know, you got the Nazis, you got the Japanese, they're the bad guys.
Listen, America but is World always the good guy. Always. I see the world through the lens of red, white, and blue.
Yeah, but World War One.
It doesn't matter.
It's
mustard gas. Come on.
Was that?
Mustard gas.
I prefer ketchup gas.
Sorry. Before we devolved, did you send the...
I did. I sent.
And is that to his personal email or is that to his assistant?
No, it's his email.
See? I'm my own assistant. I have jassistantemail.com and then I come in and go,
Jay,
thank you
for not CCing Jay on that note. Because I think you got to, there needs to be a buffer with the superfan. Like Jessica is now the buffer between Jay Black.
Was that him writing back?
It was not because she also does not tag me in it because I don't, I have 100,000 unread emails. I don't do email. 100,000.
Yeah.
You know how stupid that is?
The point is,
I don't, yeah.
You know what I did? I had like 40,000 unread emails.
What'd you do? Delete them all?
I just stopped using that email address. I honestly abandoned the email address and I went to two different new ones. I said, we're done.
I got a note today that I read on the air 2 weeks and a day ago. No, 3 weeks and a day ago.
Holy crap.
Do you see how much time has passed?
If you're keeping your Bill Spadia diary.
By a beach umbrella. Killed. Like impaled in the neck. And you were being
insensitive about it?
I was until here's what happened. They're banning tents from certain Jersey Shore towns.
Right.
So I said, you're missing the whole point. Like there is a menace on the beach. These beach umbrellas that get uprooted with the wind and then they fly down the beach and they impale people. Now, I was kind of tongue in cheek on that. I started getting notes. Yeah. I've had three so far. One death and one maiming.
Okay. Send them back eggplant and poop emojis. Because here's why.
I think Jessica's going to have to respond to this one.
This drives me nuts. I hate this shit. This happens to me sometimes. I do a thing in my act where I go, you know, if you have a little, you got to know if it's a boy or girl. So, you know, if you paint the bedroom blue or if you kill yourself. That's the important thing. You got to know ahead of time what you're going to do. And it's a little throwaway joke. I have two daughters. Ha ha. And a woman came up to me after the show and was like, you know, suicide is a very serious problem. I had a best friend kill herself. And I don't think it's appropriate. And I was like, number one, did you think I was actively advocating for suicide? Did you think that was in the
context?
Bit,
suicide if you have a daughter.
Yeah. In the bit, did you think like I did 40 minutes of comedy to get you all warmed up? And then I was like, oh, here's my insidious real reason for doing stand up is to encourage people to kill themselves. Is that what you thought?
What did she say?
She said, no. And I don't think you're taking seriously what I'm saying. But no, what she said was, I don't think that you're doing that. However, it's insensitive to the people who are dealing with that. And I said, I get what you're talking about. I understand that it's insensitive to you, but it's also a fairly common hyperbolic statement to say, I was so upset. Like when I said, I am so upset, I was so hungry, I could eat a horse.
You're not really going to eat a horse.
I did.
Certain parts of the world.
The horse owners in the audience probably didn't go, oh, what if he ate my horse? They realized I was using a common hyperbolic statement. So I get nuts when you say, oh, it's a bad problem. Beach. Yeah, of course. One person got impaled by a beach.
Aren't you kind of shocked that actually happened, though?
No,
through the neck.
You know, it's a
like,
big
what
world.
What was her last moment? Like,
peaceful.
See,
it was great. Right? Looking in the ocean.
Right, I'm at the ocean. All of a sudden, boom.
I think it was a big, big thing of irony. I think she was like, God, this sun is terrible.
I think
we should have brought it on. And then she went right out. And everybody's like, well, she died doing what she loved, ironically commenting on her own situation. So,
the title is going to be tough on this one.
It's Vagina Eggs 2. It's going to be Vagina Eggs Part 2. I think it's easy.
All right.
I am so excited about this podcast. This was fantastic.
You are an Anthony Johnston super fan.
I have
to say he was great.
He
guest, interesting and funny.
And he handled our shit so well.
And I insulted him twice.
Yeah, you
not on purpose.
I didn't watch your movie. That was definitely
three times.
I didn't watch your movie because I was having a meat festival.
Didn't watch your movie. Why the hell are you a vegetarian? And by the way, how much did you make on
your comic strip? How much did your comic strip make? You know, I use comic strips to wipe my butt.
I'm thinking you two may record the next podcast without me. All of a sudden they'll be like, no, we don't need you today. Don't worry.
I'm a little upset that you're not wearing a blazer today.
So you know,
I have the blazer with me.
Oh my God, you got to put the blazer on.
All right, I will.
You know how it takes like 10 minutes sometimes to get someone calling in up on the line. Mm-hmm. So I was like, let's just get that process started now. And Jay was like, Bill's got to be here.
Yeah.
See how
Thank
long
you,
it takes,
Jay.
Though? Yeah,
Thank
I know.
You, Jay.
He had your back.
You know what like, I am, Bill?
He did.
I'm a Bill Spadia loyalist. When the revolution comes.
Thank you. You're with me.
Yes.
You're taking sides.
I'm taking sides right now. Listen, your politics are a little muddled. You know, you're not a clear thinker when it comes to that. But other than that, you're a good guy.
All right,
are we signing off? Did we plug our sponsor?
Well, wait, I'm putting my blazer on here.
Yeah, put your blazer on.
Blazer seems like an old school thing to say.
Yeah.
Like, I think it's a sport coat. Or is that old?
What's
the old school? I don't know.
I think it's a sport coat.
Do you know why it's called a sport coat?
Why?
Because you used to wear that to play tennis.
No way. That
in the 1910s.
I should have white shorts on under this blazer.
The 1910s were such a screwed up time. People were like, I got to get my blazer on. Going to go play tennis. That's what global warming has done, Bill.
That's what that
you is. Could wear a sport coat in the summer.
I have to go do a whole rant on global warming in about 2 minutes.
Pro or anti?
Interesting. Thoughtful.
Thoughtful?
Thoughtful.
Pro or anti-thought?
Pro rational thought and good public policy. Anyway, you can go to the website, NJ1015.com, and you can, what's that? I'm plugging my stuff on the
All right, go ahead. Yeah.
So I have a show page. It's my face. You click on my face and all the things that I write are right there. And there's some video. So I'm going to do a video to explain. I'm going to talk about carbon dioxide parts per million. I feel like it needs a whiteboard.
What clickbait?
Right? Can you imagine?
I see carbon dioxide parts per million. I'm like, I'm clicking. I don't give a shit what this is about. I got to know.
I couldn't get a picture of the woman who had been impaled by the umbrella. So we're going with that.
I wonder if her last words were like, oh man, carbon dioxide's so thick in the air today.
It's so thick today.
If there's only some strong breeze that would come and blow it away.
All right. I'm gonna
Jessica, do you just want to get us out of here?
We just want to say thank you to Vinny.
Oh my God, did we forget the sponsor?
Do you think Vinny the Brand, umbrella Stress went Factory. Into her neck, closed, and then opened once it got in there? And she looked like a big lizard? She had like the lizard thing from Jurassic Park.
All right, so thank you to our sponsor, Vinny Brand.
That's someone's parent.
This is actually a new level of insensitivity from you.
I know. We usually don't hear
right?
this insensitive.
The lizard woman with the umbrella. I feel bad. And you know why I really feel bad? Because the note is actually nice. She's like, thanks for talking about this.
About the serious problem. Yes.
So it's like a,
she probably has a foundation.
Nice, she's like, somebody finally gets it. Wow.
She's probably got like, she goes to the beach with flyers.
She definitely has a GoFundMe page.
Oh yeah, she does have a GoFundMe anti-umbrella page.
I may contribute. All right, you want to sign us off?
No, we want to say thank you to Vinny Brand, our sponsor at the Stress Factory. He's so amazing. Go to the Stress Factory and watch and laugh.
She probably hears that.
Stressfactory.com. And 3 weeks ago in a day,
we were there.
I popped in out of the blue, surprising Jay Black in the middle of his set.
I Sammy Davis Jr. you up on stage. Do you think she hears that Rihanna song Umbrella? And did they play that at the funeral?
It's terrible. Should I read it?
I feel like I want to know what the whole email says.
Oh, it was her aunt. Just wanted to tell you that my aunt was killed on the beach in Rockaway, New York, from the end of an old wooden umbrella that went flying through the air and landed through her neck. This is in the 70s. My cousin fought to end sharp tip umbrellas and have umbrellas made with rounded tips. Now, the challenge with the rounded tip.
I had to go to the bathroom.
What a cause. Wait, what a cause.
That's the cause. Rounded tip umbrellas are the cause.
I wonder.
That's so stupid.
I don't know what to ask her in return. I feel like this is a deeper story.
This was in the 70s?
Yeah.
What if this family was like the center of like all of the bad 1970s? Like, you remember lawn darts? Like her cousin was killed by lawn darts. So they came out and they said.
No, what's a lawn dart?
Remember that game where it was like you had a hoop. And you had another hoop when you stood and you took these.
Darts? Oh, they stuck in the lawn.
And you threw it. And people were dying left and right.
Because they were sharp. Because you only play games like that when you're drunk.
Right.
That's why people die. It's like cornhole.
Yeah.
Which really shouldn't be called that.
Well, I mean, it depends on how you play.
Doesn't that sound ridiculous? Cornhole?
Cornhole, it's another name for butthole, Jessica. Yeah, you're cornhole.
I just never want to hear the word turgid again.
No, it is.
No.
Don't you agreed. Remember? Beavis became cornholio. I need teepee for my bunghole. You remember that? That was a cornhole is your butt.
So it should be changed is what you're saying.
And it depends on, you know, what you like to do with beanbags, Bill.
Exhausted. With what?
It depends on what you want to do with beanbags. That's all
I'm saying. It's a valid point.
I'm not here to yell at you. I'm sorry. I was talking to you as my wife was calling.
Yeah,
and my brain
went
to yell at you.
You got like, totally what? Distracted.
Well, because my wife is calling and generally she calls to yell at me.
All right.
Anyway. Just right. Vinny Brand, us out. Come.
No, we did that. We're done. He's fine. All right. Vinny's doing
Speaking
great.
Millennial Podcast, follow me on Twitter at Chasing Jess Nutt and follow Bill Spadia on Twitter at Bill Spadia. And Jay Black still needs a Twitter
and
handle.
And find me at www.jayisturgid.org.
Right.
We're trying to raise money to stop erections at the beach.
Oh, boy.
My